welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Happy New Year, James.
Hey, Happy New Year, pal. Happy New Year.
I didn't watch Raw this year either, so.
Yeah, neither have I.
He did it again.
2017's off to a good start.
No.
Welcome back to Lucha Lowdown. We are talking Lucha Underground. This is another double dose episode because, you know, the holidays.
Because you, the fans, demanded it.
Yes, because you.
They love dose of dose.
The believers love when we talk about not one episode, but two episodes and keep you, you know, waiting. But no, actually, the holidays, you know, took us far away from you again, unfortunately. So we're going to be catching up on the episodes The Gauntlet and Evil Rising. Let's start with The Gauntlet. Because obviously that came first. Right off the bat, overall, what'd you think of this episode?
I like the very end of it, for sure. And basically its namesake. And I'm coming around on a storyline that we saw coming and that I wasn't too thrilled about.
Fair. That being said, I loved this episode. I thought this was a terrific episode. I thought it featured one of the best main events we've gotten in Lucha Underground, and certainly a standout for season 3, which has had a lot of good main events. I really enjoyed this episode, and some things took a dark turn, which we have sort of speculated about from the beginning of Lucha Lowdown as far as potentials. So I thought it was a very important episode as well. And right off the bat, we get, I think, as you were the first one to probably call on this, Puma Dark. So we get Prince Puma and Vampiro in a vignette right off the bat, and Vampiro asking if he's ready to sort of begin his journey into darkness, and he has to pledge his fealty to Vampiro, which he does. Jeff, I obviously thought of you immediately as such a huge Prince Puma fan. What did you think of this scene?
This is why I texted you while you were at the Warriors game, Puma, no.
See,
I was heartbroken.
And you actually did not. I thought you were referring to something else because I made the mistake, as Jeff just alluded to, I had to work at the Warriors, and so I was not able to watch this episode live, and I made the stupid idiot mistake of going onto Twitter, and I saw a Lucha Underground episode review pop up on my Twitter feed, complete with a photo of Prince Puma attacking, which we'll get to momentarily. So actually,
I liked what Puma did there.
It had already been spoiled for me that Puma was coming back in this episode. However, I will say this, right from the jump where it does the recaps and it recaps the Grave Consequences match that Mil Muertes beat Prince Puma in, I knew Puma, I mean, you know, as a fan that if they're calling back to that, that we're going to get the next evolution of what's going on with Prince Puma. So it really wasn't that much of a spoiler when I actually watched the episode, but I was bummed that it was not a complete surprise to me. But, I mean, it's something that we speculated about, though, you know, from the start of this season, you know, right from the trailer that, you know, that the Vampiro interacting with Prince Puma, what was going on. I mean, it builds very nicely from Puma's sort of more aggressive start towards the end of season 2. You're not a fan, though?
I'm coming around, and I think the next episode we're talking about will also help with that, because I thought Puma was pretty badass there. Yeah, dude, it's just, I hate the idea of Puma being tarnished like this. I mean, I didn't care so much when it happened in the Pentagon, because, you know, he was kind of a psychopath to begin with. But Puma's Goku.
Yeah, no, you're right. And we've talked about it before that he, I mean, even the color scheme, but similar.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is, I do not see this
it's
as
like
a forever thing.
It's like reading an Elseworlds Superman comic. You know, it just doesn't feel right to me.
I get you on that. I think it's been pretty well done so far. So from there, we jumped right into what they teased the previous episode, which is Jeremiah Crane versus Mil Muertes. And I just, as Katrina and Mil Muertes were just walking out, I just was struck by it. It's like, I love that pairing so much. That they're terrific together. But right off the bat, again, Jeremiah Crane's in-ring work, although this match was short, his kicks, man, he sells those very well, and, you know, his opponents obviously do too, but really high-impact kicks that I really enjoy. And I liked Mil. They've kept him looking strong, and he absorbed those really well, and right to that point in the match where he hit him with the Reaper's Trident, and Crane just folded up like an accordion. I thought their interplay back and forth in the start of this match was good. What did you think about the in-match stuff before we got to the shenanigans?
Yeah, first, just them coming out. I love the fearlessness of Crane as he was just shouting shit. Also, something I noted, I do believe Mil Muertes was checking out Katrina's ass as she bent to get into the ring.
I can't blame him for that.
I don't blame him either. I could be dead too, and I'd be checking it out. And I also wrote down about Crane just landing on his head and being squashed. I love that. I think you're right about Mil Muertes, and I think he's getting his credibility and strength back. I mean, I don't want to say that he ever looked weak, because that's not the case. But he definitely seemed more beatable against
recently.
Certain opponents. Yeah, well, and now I think that they're kind of getting him back on the right track.
Well, keep in mind, he did pretty much, up to this point, we can say that he did kill King Cuerno for at least an extended period of time on TV that we have not
seen.
Yeah,
he's still dead.
Yeah. Like, he's still not back. So that's kept him pretty strong. But you're right, he had taken a little bit, because, you know, we had the shiny new monster on the block in Matanza, so a little bit of that shine kind of went away. But I do think you're right, especially getting such a huge win over Prince Puma in that Grave Consequences match, I think really helped rebuild him quite a lot. I agree with you there. So continuing on with this match, one of the other things that I noted, so we got that vignette in the beginning with Prince Puma and Vampiro. Vampiro being very quiet on commentary, Stryker calling him out, and Vampiro going into like master mode and just saying that, you know, I'm just watching. I thought that was great. I liked the little sort of lick of death slash blessing from Katrina to Crane in this match. I thought that was a nice touch. Just all the little things that they did in this. And this is an extremely short match. It's a setup for what's going to happen with Prince Puma and Mil Muertes. But I thought they did some really good things here to keep Mil Muertes looking strong, even though he lost because Prince Puma would interfere in this match when he had Crane set up for the flatliner. But I thought Puma's interference keeps Mil Muertes looking strong. Crane getting the sort of cheap cheating win keeps his credibility too. He actually got a win over Mil Muertes, which I don't care. That's still huge in Lucha Underground. He's still one of the top guys, and rightfully so. So I thought this was such a nice little package that they presented here, that everything served a purpose. Like there was no waste in this. It was efficient. It did a lot of things in a short amount of time. I really enjoyed it. What did you think of Puma coming back, interfering with the Singapore cane, the kendo stick, whatever you want to call it, and then he did the flip and bowed to Vampiro? What did you think of all of that?
I like that he got the drop on Mil Muertes. What I liked about the flip and the kneeling to Vampiro was just how they shot it, because you have Stryker on the commentary and he goes, "Is he kneeling at Vamp?" And it shows Vampiro, and then it cuts to a commercial right after that. And I just thought it was so perfect. It seemed like turning the page in a comic book or something.
Yeah, dude, you're spot on. And there is some really good editing throughout this episode that I noted as well later on. I enjoyed this too. Again, it's a compelling storyline with Prince Puma. It is very shocking that he is aligning himself with Vampiro. I like that Vampiro has another pupil. I like in my heart of hearts, I still wish he was with Pentagon. Because I really enjoyed that pairing, and I feel we got a little bit shortchanged that they split them up so soon, especially after they kept them so apart in season two. And it wasn't really till towards the end that they with the training and stuff like that. But they did like keep them apart for an extended period of time, and then we got a little bit, and then a little bit at season two's end. And then, bam, they're done. They dissolved. And I was like, oh, man, I really we've not really seen them hitting on all cylinders. But this still is a very interesting storyline to me. The next thing, we got a vignette with Sexy Star. And was that Jeff Budd that I saw interacting with her in the back? Because that is one huge Mundo fan. that's how I was checking. I was like, is that Jeff? I had to rewind it a few times. Good Lord.
I closed my eyes. I thought I was having a conversation with Sexy Star.
I mean, Mundo was getting a big time blowy verbally from this guy in the backstage area as he was talking to Sexy Star. I thought it was hilarious too. It's like, you know, I'm sorry you lost to Johnny Mundo or whatever, but you know, can't really blame you. He is the best. Just and how this guy is at catering too. I mean, I guess he's now part of the temple, but he gave a sexy star a package that was waiting for her. It had another spider inside. I loved Sexy's reaction to her angry reactions the last few weeks have been outstanding. Just like supernova sexy star is terrific. But what did you, I mean, this is quick and just setting up more, you know, another ended up setting up another match with Mariposa. But what did you think about this quick little thing and your debut on Lucha Underground, as far as I'm concerned?
I loved it because I didn't think that guy was saying anything that was out of place. Mundo is the best. I also liked when he gave her the package and it's like, ah, maybe it's from a fan. I used to send letters to Mundo all the time. Never responded though.
That was great. That was good stuff.
But I was also thinking, I was like, especially with the close-up shot, why don't they just use an actual tarantula?
I don't know.
It seems like something I would have filmed.
Well, you know, well, you were in the scene, so I don't disagree
Fair
with
enough.
You there.
That was a prop I brought into the scene.
Yeah,
so
there it is.
Makes sense. Yeah, you know what? I refuse to work with an actual spider. That's why they had to use
it. And that makes total sense, too. Yeah. But so Sexy Star's pissed. I really enjoyed the next vignette, which was Tejano getting ready for the next match in the Best of Five series for the Ultimate Opportunity. But so Tejano's working out, and Famous B shows up. First of all, love Famous B's tie. I need one. The 423 Get Fame tie that he had on was just outstanding. And I know it adorns all of his clothing, but something about it being on his tie just I thought was terrific. And also the thing that I thought about this scene was Famous B, as we've talked about multiple times, he's one of the few true heels in Lucha Underground. You know, that he's a prick, he's a bad guy, and everybody boos him. But in this scene, he had some great heel logic because I didn't think he was wrong in what he was saying to Tejano. And as far
I'm
as
so,
yeah, go
oh,
ahead.
Go ahead. I was gonna say, I'm so glad you said that because I thought B was spitting some hot truth right there.
He was, yeah, hard truths to Tejano.
Yeah, you don't want to hear it, but it's true. I think a lot of the fanfare Tejano gets is basically because of his resume and what he's done prior to Lucha Underground. I still don't think that they've used him properly, and he's going up against Cage. Who, I mean, people are doing the Terminator clap before the match even starts.
Yeah, exactly. And that, so when he's like, you know, that's why they cheer for Cage and not you, and, you know, why you haven't really translated to the fans and everything like that. And it's, so the fact that it makes so much actual sense, I think, will play into maybe perhaps a logical heel turn for Tejano as well. Your thoughts, do you think he actually ends up joining Famous B?
Well, the fact that they're mentioning it, you know, means that they're acknowledging it. He did kind of have a thoughtful expression on his face after B and Brenda left.
Yeah, Brenda said to call her, so can't turn that down.
Don't have to ask me twice.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought that was a very well done vignette, and again, acknowledging something that sort of has come across on screen, I thought was a good move.
I also wouldn't mind B having more than one client.
Yeah, he should have kind of
and
like
a couple of like really competent clients too. Could you imagine the two of them working together? I would love to see that, Wagner and Tejano.
Yeah, no, I would like to see Famous B build up kind of a client base because I mean, Dr. Wagner Jr. has been very successful with Famous B in Lucha Underground, so I think it makes total sense. So I like that. Vamp again. We went back on commentary, basically telling Matt Stryker not to bring up why Puma was kneeling to him. And
yeah, he shut that conversation down.
He does that. That's what he does. It's like we get like a little bit of Master Vampiro, and then it's like, no, I'm just a commentator, so let's not bring it up. But we got a match that I was excited to see. I was sad by what happened during in the match, but it was cool seeing Angelico and Son of Havoc teaming up. They were teaming up against Worldwide Underground members PJ Black and Jack Evans. I love PJ Black and Jack Evans' entrance. All the flips and stuff that they were doing was great. The sort of acrobatic show that Angelico and Jack Evans put on in the middle of the match, I thought was terrific as well. What did you think of this?
Yeah, I always like when PJ Black and Jack Evans are fighting together because they do their little handstand high fives.
They're like the Ginyu Force.
They kind of are, man. I don't know if you noticed this, but when PJ Black like got up and was around Melissa, he was like checking out her ass.
I did not notice
that. And she was looking at him, too. She knew that he was doing it. He was just, like, ogling her.
Well, that's who he is.
That's what I was saying. I was like, they're still perpetuating that character, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you, I love the series between Evans and Angelico, and then they both do like the karate stance at the end. I thought that was really cool. I've always liked Angelico because, you know, with his long limbs, he does a lot of like interesting kicks at weird angles, a lot of leg sweeps, things like that. Stuff that you're not used to seeing in a lot of different styles of wrestling, so I'm glad that they bring all of that in. So Angelico really did dislocate his elbow?
I think he actually got hurt, yes.
Damn it, that sucks.
That's certainly what it looked like to me watching it multiple times, is that he actually got hurt during this match, which is really unfortunate because he gets hurt. He was the legal man in the ring.
And he was done after that. He didn't do anything. And yep. It was a clean victory,
yep.
Which it is kind of odd to see Evans and Black get that.
Yeah, and they ended it real quick after that, too.
Yeah, so, there wasn't much more to it. That's a shame, because before that, dude, this was really Angelico's match. He was the one who was the shining star for most of it.
That's what I was saying. I even wrote down in my notes was Angelico equals superstar. I mean, he really was.
Yeah, isn't that what Stryker said?
I think he said something like that. Yeah, and
something
then
reminiscent to that. Yeah.
And just how sad it is that he just got back and suffering another injury. So that was a huge bummer. It made me feel like very similarly to Ivelisse going down. I hope that the fact that we saw him in a match with Johnny Mundo at the En Vivo event down in Escondido. I hope that means that the injury was not that serious and that he will be back soon. But, yeah, definitely a huge, huge bummer. Moving on from there, we got another vignette.
Go ahead. One thing we got to bring up. Vampiro quote, grabbed him by the short and curlies, and I mean on the chin, not the nutsack.
Yeah.
Talking about Son of Havoc's beard getting grabbed.
Yep, which is not the first time that's happened with Son of Havoc's beard.
I just love Vampiro's style of speech.
He's used nutsack two episodes in a row at this point now, too. So he certainly has a...
That means he's on fire. He's heating up.
He has a particular vernacular. Hopefully the nutsack's not heating up, because he should get that checked. But from there, we got a vignette in El Jefe's office. We had him opening up the box that contained what we assume is the ultimate opportunity. Then we got Sexy Star storming in it, and I love just the dick line from Dario where he's just like, oh, you're champion for 1 week and you don't knock anymore. It's like, oof, that's cold-blooded Dario, very cold-blooded.
Very accurate. She shouldn't just be barging into his office.
But yeah, super quick vignette is that we're going to get Sexy Star and Mariposa in the next episode, which turns out to be the mid-season finale.
Is it another No Mas match?
No, just a good old-fashioned beating.
Ah.
Yes.
Dude, I find Sexy Star's angry voice adorable.
Wow. You sound like a real PJ Black right
now. PJ Black.
I know. You are.
I just pat her on the head. Or if I was sitting down, I'd put her on my lap.
Oh, man. No, I think it's great. I like angry Sexy Star quite a lot. But that was super quick. And then
is Dario not like the most accommodating booker?
He is. And again,
he's actually not that bad of a boss.
No, he's not. He's not that bad of a brother, and he's not that bad of a boss either.
This has been his season to kind of turn things around. I think this is him at his nicest.
Dude, maybe he's happy to have the temple back and be out of the jail and everything, you know. So, I agree with you. And like we got that episode a while back now where he's like, you know, it's not as easy as it looks just making matches and everything like that. So. I appreciate the hard work that El Jefe has been doing for all of us believers. But that did bring us to the main event of the evening, which is Cage versus Tejano for the ultimate opportunity. Cage led the series at this point 2-1 in the best of five. I really enjoyed Vampiro sort of waxing poetic about Tejano and everything that he had been through, helping flesh out his backstory and everything like that. What did you think of now, this first match is quick. But I thought, I mean, it set everything up so beautifully. What did you think of what they were doing here?
Well, with the first match, it definitely was like Tejano's this man on a mission. Obviously, he has zero margin for error because Cage wins one more match. That's it.
Yep.
What I thought was kind of interesting and sort of uncharacteristic was we saw a bloody, very like mortal Brian Cage.
Yes.
You know, like, I mean, this was the most vulnerable I think we've ever seen him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought what was cool about this is when the turnbuckle got exposed, it almost seemed like it was an accident. Like I was watching it and it seemed, oh, was that really supposed to come down? I mean, and that's really kind of the ultimate that you're going for in pro wrestling is that question. Was that supposed to happen? Is sort of like the money question. And then, you know, Tejano drops Cage down on the exposed turnbuckle. So, yes, of course, it was supposed to happen. And, yes, he is bleeding. And the great moment from the first match to me is Matt Stryker on commentary. He says, he's a man after all, because that's not oil. That, my friends, is blood. It's so good the way you delivered it. I enjoyed that thoroughly. And you're right. I mean,
his face, a crimson mask.
Yes. And he's really churching it up on commentary with that, which is great because you're right. It was seeing Cage at his most vulnerable. And so Tejano tied it in short order right after that. Dario Cueto came out and was saying that, you know, the ultimate opportunity is, as he said, so freaking awesome, or really freaking awesome this week is what he said. And I wrote down, I was like, Cueto is a joy to watch. He might be my favorite television character, bar none, right now. And that was my This Is Why I Love Lucha moment, because Dario Cueto just consistently hitting rocks all the time. Such a great character in a world where, like, the authority figure has been done to death. For him to be this refreshing and this enjoyable, I think is really really a marvel, honestly, that he comes off this well. And he announced that, so it's so freaking awesome and everything like that, that we're going to get Matt. We're not going to wait for the fifth and deciding match. It's going to happen right now. Oh, yeah, and it's going to be anything goes. So just great stuff from him. And I thought that the fifth and final match of this best of five was outstanding. I thought this whole main event was just terrific. What did you think of this match?
Well, the beginning of it, when Cage was still sort of resting on the ropes, I was thinking of the first Ninja Turtles movie when the four of them were on the roof after Shredder first showed up and kicked their asses. And then Cage was like thinking to himself, like, when exactly did I lose control of the situation here?
Yeah, seriously.
I was up 2-0.
Yep, and he's choking. He's choking right now. I liked right from the beginning is Tejano biting a bloody Cage right on the forehead.
Dude, that looked gnarly, man.
It did.
He was gushing before that.
He
was just gross.
And so,
and then he like spit.
Yeah, he spit the blood. He wiped it on his chest like war
paint. I like
paint.
The wiping the blood on the chest. That looked really badass. And he actually had like the finger lines too.
Yeah, I just thought all that aggression was great. And I think, again, maybe setting up a potential heel turn for Tejano. As it's clear, it's almost like a showing of frustration or just a willingness to do anything. Again, it's anything goes here in this main event.
Love that song.
And yeah, I did too. But I mean, Cage was getting really beat down. So I thought this was a great showing for Tejano that he was really taking it to Cage, one of the top guys.
Well, yeah, he was dominant for most of the match again. I mean, Cage had his spots where he was fighting back periodically, but Tejano continued to get the better of him. I was thinking of the battle on the bleachers. And then spine on the pine.
Yes, the spine on the pine, or oak, as Stryker had said that it was earlier on. Reinforced oak bleachers there to hold all the believers. I liked whenever Cage becomes the flying machine, it's always enjoyable to watch because he's so big and muscular. Seeing him be able to have that kind of body control is super impressive. But yeah, the suplex on the bleachers, the spine on the bleachers. I just thought this was a great match, and no matter what, was great for both guys as far as how they looked coming out of it. I liked when Vampiro said it was like a tank battle going through like the village and just, you know, creating destruction. I Vampiro bringing out a war/historical reference that I think would have been very appropriate if Matt Stryker had said. So I was impressed with that quite a bit, but they fought for a long time. This was a healthily long main event segment here between the two matches. I mean, they were going, again, it was mostly Tejano in control, which I thought he needed, and I thought it showed a lot of great perseverance from Cage. I mean, he was taking the hits from the sandpaper snake, as Stryker calls it. I really like that as a signature weapon for Tejano, too. I think that's very cool. Then there was another great moment where they got back in the ring, and Tejano caught him for another spinebuster, readjusted, and dropped him on the steel chair. I thought that was great. And then Cage, when he started to make his rally, he hit Tejano with that massive chair shot, which just looked super vicious. And that was what turned the tide. But it was as they were both laying there after the chair shot that there was a really great moment of camera work that I got to give credit out. There was a close-up on the – because, like you said, Cage was gushing throughout this match. Like, he was dripping blood. And so there's this great moment. They're both lying on the ground after this chair shot. They're spent. and the camera is close up on this blood, like this pool of blood that has fallen onto the mat, and then you just see the two wrestlers in the background of the shot. I just thought that was such like a well done artistic shot. You know, so if there are any like painters or anything in our believer audience that, you know, would like to paint a wrestling scene, I certainly would like that one. That was pretty cool. But then Cage did rally after that. He hit the pile driver and he won. He wins the ultimate opportunity. How stoked were you, Jeff?
Oh no, I was really stoked. Just going into the pile driver though, I was glad that the submission didn't work. Tejano submitting Cage,
yeah,
because
bad.
After a match like this, you can't have somebody tap out. You know, these guys, they'd rather die than lose. And then I was also glad that the discus clothesline didn't work, because I think that was the arm that was supposedly injured.
Yeah.
So it would have been weird for Cage to finish him with that as well.
Well, and I also like that too, because that move has finished people in the past. And I think even Tejano in what, the first of this best of five series, I think is what finished Tejano perhaps. And
he
so
got
the
him
fact
one
that he,
of those times.
Yeah. So the fact that Tejano kicked out at that point showed just, you know, how far they were willing to go. Yeah. So yeah, I agree with you on that. But yeah, so you were excited with the big Cage victory, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. No, you know he's one of my top three guys.
I know. Dario then, again, just awesome, comes out, and he's very excited the Cage won. But he's not going to give it out in public with all the believers watching, because he, and I quote, they're too weak-minded to understand it. So that was a great dick
move. Well, I mean, it is
too.
A godly artifact.
Yes.
It's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. Again,
it's not for mere mortals.
No. So he keeps beckoning Cage to come into his office. So we get the post-credits vignette of Dario offering the gauntlet to Cage. Cage, very dismissive of this gauntlet. You know, I think he alluded to it being like sort of a Renaissance fair prop.
Totally perfect reaction, because his character is not steeped in the lore.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe Aerostar would have freaked out, but no, this isn't for Cage.
Yep, agreed. But Dario convinces him to at least just try it on, and then Cage pretty much goes full Thanos with the gauntlet on and lifts Dario up off his feet, choking him, and just like, hey, thanks for the gift. I thought it would have been cool if when he put the gauntlet on that it would have healed his wounds, through whatever editing, the blood just goes away. I thought that would have been fucking sick. But
that would have been a nice touch.
Yeah, but they didn't do that. But, you know, just for if we ever reboot or anything, or anybody else gets the gauntlet, that I think that would be a cool touch if it would have healed them. Because they just went through this grueling match, and they made such a big point of the blood. I thought that would have been a nice touch. But what did you think of this?
I liked it a lot. I was a little surprised that he still retained his own personality, but I wonder if it's going to be
so
something
far.
Where... thank you, because I actually wrote down the Crimson Bands of Sitarak. All right? I think he's like Kane Marco. And at first, he's just the juggernaut with those abilities, but the whole time, he's really just an avatar, and if his will isn't strong enough, he will just be taken over.
Well, yeah, and he's a huge X-Men fan, so I'm sure he probably would have given some input, too, so we know...
I'm sure Brian Cage is listening right now, and he's nodding his head, and he goes, exactly.
Yeah,
I was thinking of myself as Kane Marco in this.
Yeah, we know Brian Cage, one, is listening, of course, and two, again, steeped in the X-Men
Everyone's
lore...
listening.
So I would hope, yes, that he would have had some input on that. But, yeah, so he's still himself so far. But
so far, yeah. He's going to wrestle with the gauntlet now, right? Like, is that –
that's what
thing?
I was thinking about, too. Yeah, maybe he's finished. Maybe that's why – I don't know. They're gonna
that could
do
help
some,
the clothesline.
That's what I was thinking about, is why they've been using the discus clothesline more. Maybe it'll really take it to another level with the gauntlet on and everything. So – I don't know. Somebody's got a thing for gauntlets in Lucha Underground, though, because remember Mil Muertes punching through the casket in the Graver Consequences match? So
maybe they're setting up for an MCU crossover in a couple years.
They could. Hey, it makes sense, honestly. But so it remains to be seen exactly what this ultimate opportunity will end up looking like for Cage. But there's another shoe to drop here, another gauntlet to drop, I suppose, with this. But... again, I thought that this was a terrific episode. Evil Rising is the next episode, which we will get into in a moment. But first, let's take care of a little business. Happy New Year, everybody. All you believers out there, thank you for listening to Lucha Lowdown. We certainly do appreciate it. Just a couple things as far as if you are enjoying the show, you want to get a hold of us, please hit us up on Twitter @Lucha Lowdown or on Facebook. You can find us on there. LuchaLowdown at gmail.com. Love hearing from you all and interacting with all you believers. When I am not working at a Warriors game or what have you, I do live tweet every episode, and it's been really fun interacting with you on there. So please continue to do so. Hit us up on Twitter. If you like what you hear, subscribe to us on iTunes if you've not already done so, and Audio Boom if it's the whole vice versa situation there. But most importantly, rate and review us on iTunes. It's the biggest help you can be to us here at the podcast. I know a lot of podcasts ask everyone to do that, and that's a good reason, because it is, again, the best way you can help us and keep this whole train moving and get the word out about Lucha Lowdown. Tell your friends about it. Wrestling fans, we're a tight-knit community, and we appreciate you listening. And now back to the rest of the show. The next episode we are reviewing is Evil Rising. Overall, what'd you think of this episode, Jeff?
I like this episode a lot. What was I going to say? Oh, I liked it basically because of how this one ended. I thought it was really cool. And I guess, in effect, how this one began, since once again, it's kind of like a bookend sort of thing.
It is. And I too, really enjoyed how this one ended also. And obviously with one of my top guys, Mil Muertes, is how it began. And Katrina telling him that Vampiro is toying with dark, or dare I say, strange magics, Jeff. And so I really liked Katrina telling Mil that, you know, you got to go through Vampiro. She had, you know, obviously sussed out that that's what was going on with Puma and everything. And so we're going to be getting sort of a black magic on black magic war here. And then we got Katrina and Jeremiah Crane interacting in the hallway, and Jeremiah Crane just, you know, coming right at Katrina being like, I beat the man that you loved. Like, you know, I love the psychology of the fact in Jeremiah Crane's head. He's like, look, in his mind, I beat the guy that you loved. It's sort of like old school, like trying to, like, I don't know, court or woo somebody. Like, he just beat the suitor in a duel.
He's the better man.
Yeah, so that I thoroughly enjoyed just that sort of mindset. And then, I mean, Katrina, thank you so much for admitting once again on air that you do not love Mil Muertes and that you are in love with me. We all saw it with our own two eyes, right, Jeff? She loves me. She said it.
Well, she definitely said that she loves someone else, or that Mil Muertes is not the one that she loves. And you're the only other person I know who's in the running besides Jeremiah Crane. And she didn't say I love you to Jeremiah Crane, so
through the quadratic formula,
I'm pretty sure it's you or D, not given.
No.
If this is a multiple choice test.
No. It has to be me. And
maybe it's me.
No, definitely not. And I contemplated at this point, because Katrina is so bewitching to me, that I should just stop watching Lucha Underground just to preserve this illusion for as long as I can. But no, I really enjoyed this vignette. What'd you think?
I like the vignette a lot. I'm glad that you mentioned the line about Vampiro toys with dark magic, because I like the idea of Katrina sort of dismissing Vampiro's magical abilities, because she would, of course, be a much more accomplished sorceress than, you know, he is a sorcerer.
High priestess.
And then
darkness.
Also, I liked Mil Muertes speaking, and he's really pissed off that Puma's still alive, because, yeah, when you think about it, he did just kill Prince Puma.
Yeah. And I like that
it just happened.
And I like that they've given reason to everybody coming back from a grave consequences match too, you know? Is that it's through this dark sorcery every time, which is pretty cool, I think. The sort of the inclusion of the kayfabe logic and the supernatural kayfabe that goes along with that. But yeah, so this is going to be fun seeing these dark powers pair off and everything. But you mentioned Mil Muertes speaking. I, too, like Mil Muertes speaking. We got some other characters that were speaking in this that I did not expect, or that we have not really seen before, which we'll get to a little bit later on. But the first match we got was Mariposa versus Sexy Star. I liked Matt Stryker talking about his wrestling school and how, you know, he had a couple come in that were inspired by the No Mas match between Mariposa and Sexy Star. I thought that was cool to mention. And it just takes – I mean, that match was a classic.
Yeah, I know, but – between when this episode was filmed and when that episode aired, like, that didn't smell like bullshit to you?
You call Matt Stryker a liar?
Yes.
I'm not. I'm taking it at face value. I'm taking a man of his word.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That was an amazing match. It's just, I don't know about that.
I think that Mariposa and Sexy Star have the best. I think Mariposa is who Sexy Star has the best chemistry with in the ring. I think they They interact really well with one another.
Her last match with Mundo was really good, though.
Her last match with Mundo was really good, but I love the No Mas match, and there were some spots in this match that I thought were equally great, and I'm going to get right to it because it was towards the start. It might be my Why I Love Lucha moment. Is the wheelbarrow from Mariposa to Sexy Star on the outside, and then just bashing her into the commentator table was so brutal. Brutal, as it were. What did you think of that? Because that was hard to watch, but, I mean, it was really well done. It sold this match from the get-go for me.
That's actually the part that I had written down from this match because I just loved the visual of it so much. And it was great because it was the commentator's table, so it was right there in front of them as they were speaking about it. And then what I like about Mariposa versus Sexy Star is just the raw strength that Mariposa has. She's one of the stronger females because she's much bigger than the others.
Yeah.
And so she can really hurl Sexy Star around, and I like that a lot. The only other part of this match that I really enjoyed was at one point Matt Stryker said to use her pigtails as handlebars.
Yeah, I caught that too, and my mind went to a dark place.
I agree.
Just like the start of season two, it was a much darker place. But anyway, I thought this was a good match. It had kind of an abrupt end, I felt like. But you know, we didn't get a spider follow up, and then
because Mariposa's not responsible for it.
I know, but I figured that the spider tribe might reveal themselves here or something like that. But we did not.
Tarantula tribe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to think that maybe that they have, you know, multiple spiders they can do.
I think it's just tarantulas.
All right, fair. Okay, well, I guess that remains to be seen. You also thought it was just the white rabbit tribe, and it's not.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Were they not worshiping a white rabbit this week?
They were, but Malasuerte seems to be a more sort of a black rabbit kind of guy.
They worship a white rabbit.
They do.
They consider
a
white rabbit their god.
They do. I bet you
white rabbit tribe. You know, I was going to call them the rabbit tribe tonight. Forget it.
That's out now. You just made the
list.
Can't
do it.
Post-match, we got Marty the Moth coming out, and I have written down Marty just killed Mariposa because he took her down brutally. He brought her up. First, I thought they might kiss, and then he just freaking flattened
her. Thinking. I was like, so that's how it is in that family. Yes. I mean, the Moth tribe is weird.
Exactly. So it would not have been out of place. But, I mean, I kind of understand where Marty's coming from because whereas Marty has made gains in the ring and sort of been showing out nicely, Mariposa has really struggled to find her footing and has come up short in a lot of big matches. What did you think of what was going on post-match here?
Well, the way I put it was that the insect world is brutal and you can't fly if your wing is broken. And so, yeah, basically Mariposa has outlived her usefulness and she can't be the top dog in the tribe anymore, which apparently she was supposed to be the greatest warrior. So, yeah, Marty had no choice but to put her down.
This is purely speculation on my part because I stay out of any sort of spoilers. You know, I don't go on other podcasts that might talk about Lucha Underground because I don't want to know what happens. But what came to mind.
An accusation?
Yes, it's not an accusation so much as a rebuke, I guess.
It was an accident. I didn't know what he was going to say.
Yeah, well, you should be more careful. What I thought of after I sort of got over the sort of storyline implications of this was it made me think that, you know, given that a lot of people might come and go from the temple and from their involvement with Lucha Underground, is Mariposa done now?
No way, man. She's going face.
She's going to go face?
Face. I think they've been listening to the podcast. They realize that you and I are starting to come around on the Mariposa train. I definitely am a Mariposa fan now.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're going to make her a face.
All right. I don't really see that. It made me think it was so abrupt that it made me feel like that maybe she's just going on to other ventures. And if that's the case, we, of course, wish her well. I hope she sticks around because, yeah, I like her as well.
I think it would have been easier to just have her go away since she didn't really have a story going on.
That's a valid point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see where that happens. It made me kind of sad, though, because, you know, they're brother and sister, so I hope they patch things up.
Yeah, siblings are always fighting, you know that.
Yeah, I do know that, you and me. All right. So then we got the vignette with Masquerita Sagrada. He's lifting some weights, you know, pumping some iron, of course. And then,
just like the Tejano scene in the episode before.
That's
really
what I was thinking about, too. I bet you that was not an accident. But we got the Rabbit Tribe showing up, clearly stoned out of their mind, and just...
They were so tripped out.
They're just, it's the White Rabbit. And...
Our tribe's namesake.
Yes, damn you. But then Masquerita, he speaks. I think that's the first time where we've audibly had him, you know, giving out words.
Well, I think he's spoken in Spanish.
Yeah, but I think it's always been kind of like muffled. You know, I think they make it sound like it's almost coming from like underneath his mask kind of deal.
Yeah, where here he was just straight up talking.
It was just straight up talking. Yeah, like voice of God to them, I suppose. But so
maybe he wasn't speaking. Maybe that was from their perspective.
That is also possible. But why would he be denying his deityhood? Although it's not the first fiction that I've been a part of where a deity will deny it. But yeah, so what did you think of this?
It's a test of faith. I loved it. My only complaint about this was I wish, as viewers of the show, we'd gotten to know the White Rabbit Tribe a little bit more before they came face to face with who they think their deity is. Because as far as the tribe goes, we've only seen them once, haven't we?
Yeah, we saw their debut match against the Trios live, champions. Yeah. But yeah, they had the Trios Championship match, and then this is the first time that.
And
they
then just
have,
all their build-up vignettes. I would have liked to have seen just a little bit more with them before that. I mean, it's not a big deal because this was just fun. Although I would like the idea of them continuing to follow him around.
Absolutely, I think that has to be a thing, and I think it's perfect.
And he needs
a
new story anyway, so
yeah, it worked out very nicely in that regard, and it tied in from there to the next match, which is the Rabbit Tribe versus the Snake Tribe.
We booked this match a long time ago.
We did book this match, absolutely. First of all, I love the Rabbit's entrance continues. That continues here. I love that the Snake Tribe hails from when reptiles ruled the earth. That is awesome. I was aghast in a good way. I was just like, yes. Cosign on that. That is excellent. We got some lore on what Pindar means, strong fortress or dark stronghold, according to Vampiro. Also awesome. Drago coming out in chains, I thought was great.
That was so cool.
Yeah, this was just the presentation of the Snake Tribe has been top notch from the get-go, I feel like.
As far as tribe portrayal goes, they're the best.
Yeah, visually, they've been presented really well.
And they have a base, you know?
Yeah, they do. They have an awesome base, a throne room. The whole Drago thing in chains, and then Cobra Moon forcing Drago to fight for her, which I thought that was coming. Liked that. It is interesting to me that Drago did not put up more of a fight about it, which Vampiro noted on commentary. However, one of the main things I noted on commentary came before the match started, which, I feel a lot of times that Matt Stryker and Vampiro's relationship is very similar to ours sometimes, because Matt Stryker just goes, don't piss her off, and Vampiro just goes, I'm not going to sell for you. I am dying. I had to pause it. I was like, no way, because that was perfect, and that is a lot of times how you and I interact with my terrible dad jokes that I tell. I pick up what Matt's putting down all the time, and
start saying that I'm not going to sell for you.
Yeah, it's a great line. That was the moment of the night on commentary, as far as I was concerned. Just Vampiro just dead. I'm not going to sell for you, because he hasn't been a lot of times. Just I think once the chimps jokes were flying fast and furious this season. I think Vampiro decided that he just had enough, but there it was. I liked Cobra Moon outside directing traffic in this match. Vibra is a very impressive specimen in Lucha Underground. What did you think of this match?
No, dude, the best part was when Paul London came face-to-face with him and thought he was hallucinating.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Started touching his chest.
Yeah, that is excellent. They've got a great gimmick.
This was great because we even talked about how the rabbits would have to fight the snakes, and it was through, like, multiple attacks.
Yes, they did
the masters of the double tagging.
They are, yeah. They really, again, both these tribes, they have a well-defined gimmick as far as what they are and what they're supposed to be. And they've
and I want to see more of that in Lucha. I would like the other tribes to be more like these two.
Yeah, more theming.
Yeah, adapt your animal basically and start portraying those characteristics.
Yeah,
because these guys got it.
Yeah, they do. I mean, we have our, you know, it's interesting with Vibra, who is so big and imposing, but he's sort of the first luchador that gets sort of the snarky crowd reaction as they chant Luchasaurus at him. But what do you think? What do you think of him? What do you think of Pindar?
I like them both. I almost wish he was Pindar because of how Pindar was sold to us beforehand.
And this is the other side of that. We are in sync on that, on our relationship, because I wrote down the same thing, because Pindar was built up as sort of the badass. Like, when the name Pindar dropped to yeah. Drago, he was taken aback that Pindar was still alive. So I agree with you. I would have made the switch there as well.
And I mean, as far as all the fighting goes, yeah, they're great. I thought the match was fine. What's funny is, though, the one that I wanted to see fight the most, just because I'm a bigger fan, was Drago. You know,
yeah.
So I just think Drago is so talented and skilled. As far as anything in particular, just you kind of do see the transition with Drago through this match. And at the very end, I thought he was, like, extremely vicious with how he was fighting, which was different than how he had been earlier in the match.
Yeah.
And also, it's just kind of different than his character, because for the most part, he's been a face, or at least neutral.
Yeah. Well, how he finished the match, too, on Saltador with that DDT, and even Matt Stryker's, like, he almost broke his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Vampiro noted that he wasn't really putting up much of a fight. The Trios champions, Phoenix and Aerostar, the rest of them came to save their cohort.
This was my favorite part, because just visually it was so awesome. I like both their costumes. I liked how they were double attacking the snakes. And then this was a chance for them to get a drop on them instead. You know, it was the reverse of the bathroom ambush.
Yeah, absolutely. It was. And that's a very good point. What do you think about them rescuing Drago back already so soon?
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say, though, that there's something wrong with Drago.
Yeah, definitely. He didn't recognize them.
At first he didn't recognize them. Then he was kind of like, oh, yeah, okay. But
Now he's going to betray them.
He's changed, at least for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I would have actually liked this episode, him just be chained up to the ring. And just have to watch the match.
Like the background of a Mortal Kombat stage.
I was thinking he's basically Kano or Sonya Blade in Mortal Kombat 2.
Yeah.
And then, like, as the weeks go on, maybe some more vignettes, we start seeing a Drago get broken. Basically, a more PG-13 Reek story from Game of Thrones. Not so much him being, you know, massacred and mutilated, but him just getting broken as he's a prisoner.
Yeah. No, I wanted him to, and I love Drago, but I thought it would have been more interesting if they'd held on to him. But like you said, clearly something is amiss. I would not be surprised if we got a Trios championship match between them and Vibora, Pindar, and Cobra Moon, and Drago costs his teammates the championship that way. I would not be surprised by that at all. Moving from there, we did get some more backstage vignettes. We got Sexy Star and the Mac, and all I have written down here is "Hola Mac," and then their handshake. And it was the flip side of when Sexy Star was taking on Mundo Mac, saying that, you know, he wants to do this alone and prove that he belongs and everything like that. That was fine, I thought. But then it was El Jefe and the Mac, and I like that he called them the baddest bull in the building. But, you know, this was sort of a swerve moment, because it's like, no, we're not going to get the title match tonight, actually.
Yeah, speaking of bull.
Yeah, I was a little taken aback by that. But so it's going to be, it was the whole bait and switch thing. It's going to be,
you know what?
What? Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, rewatching last week's episode, though, today, they never mentioned that it's a championship match. They do just keep saying Mac versus Mundo next week.
It's fair.
It's like, oh, you know what? Totally just, I inferred meaning, I suppose.
Exactly. I guess that's on us. What I really liked from this, Jeff, because I thought it spoke to you and I a little bit, was when the Mac says, "Are you a betting man?" always bet on Mac. And I just thought to myself, I was like, I did bet on Mac with my good buddy Jeff, and I won. So
how many effing days?
So I had that written down, which then took us to the match that would decide the title stipulation, Mac versus Johnny Mundo. What did you think of the match?
The way this one ends isn't exactly how I like things to go. So that kind of took me out of this match.
I thought of you during that too. I said, Jeff will probably not be pleased by this finish. Matt Stryker was not pleased by the finish.
Dude,
I think that's
Stryker
what they were going
the
for.
Words right out of my mouth. Yeah, I'm a purist. I'm a fan of the sport. I like to see the wrestling and hate when the match ends like this. I was like, oh man, from your lips to the Aztec God's ears, Stryker.
I just let you, it's just like, this sucks.
That was me in my living room.
There were some cool moments in the match, I thought, though.
Well, they're both great performers, and that's what really makes me mad about those kinds of finishes.
I enjoyed it, but I do think that the post-match stuff is what really brought it home and took it to an emotional and personal level in this feud, because it looked like when Worldwide Underground came out and they were beating the Mac down after the match, it looked like he was like being drawn and quartered by them, you know, the way they had him pinned down. That was a very intense visual as far as how they were treating him. Mundo.
Also, Mundo is such a great heel.
Yeah, he
as
is.
As far as how he was talking to Mac.
So condescending. I do have written down, you suck, bro. That's one of the main things I have written down. It was just so
dude,
dismissive.
He's such a bad guy from an 80s film, you know?
Dude, that is spot on. He really is.
Especially with the little henchmen and shit. It's like, dude, you can't say the Mac sucks when the three of you had to beat on him. God, it was making me mad. And Mundo's my favorite.
Yeah, I know. But you're right, though. He is such a great dick heel. And it played up.
The fat piece of crap.
Yeah, he was being really mean to Mac. And I think that played off. I thought this was – it made me so happy they made the decision to put off the actual title match, because now this feud really has some juice, you know? It was perfect. They all played their roles great. Mac is such a great underdog face in this role to a heel like Mundo. So I really enjoyed that. And I liked, again, more heel logic – that he's just like, you fat piece of crap, you can barely last 10 minutes against me, so the stipulation is going to be all night long, which, of course, with Mundo's superior conditioning, feels it plays the most into his hands. I thought that was brilliant storytelling. And yeah. I liked the brutal triple curb stomp at the end, too, was awesome. So all that played with me. And then the very end, though, of this episode is Mil Muertes and Katrina showing up, sending the Worldwide Underground scattering like a bunch of scared little mice.
What I liked about that was it's the presence of Mil Muertes again.
Yes.
You know, that the Worldwide Underground, they're not even going to stick around. And I don't know if you noticed, the refs were frantically rolling the Mac out of the ring.
Yeah.
It's like, get the hell out of the way. Mil Muertes is on the warpath.
And that's what I mean. I've said it so many times, but it is those little details that really sort of preserve the immersion into this Lucha Underground world that make it so much fun. Is that they do all their diligence with that to preserve these great characters and have it all make sense. And Mil Muertes was not going to reclaim his former Lucha Underground championship glory. He went straight for Vampiro, and those shots he was landing on Vampiro, I thought looked very stiff. I thought that was a great beatdown outside the ring. And I liked I liked Vampiro calling Puma off, because Puma would show up and Vampiro basically saying, no, let me take it. And he ate the flatliner. What did you think?
You know what? I wasn't even sure if Puma was going to show up, because it's like, I didn't know if Puma was there at the temple. I thought it was just going to be a message sent beating and he was just going to destroy Vampiro like that. I did like Vampiro holding back Puma. And then also, at the very end, when they were in the ring, he grabbed onto Puma's ankle.
Yes, I saw that
too.
So
that Puma couldn't pursue him. And I was thinking Vampiro was having his, like, his Gandalf moment. It's like, follow you fools.
Yeah. He was.
And just got pummeled by the Balrog.
But I thought that was it was a great finish to this episode. And I mean, at this point, we pretty much have to say that Mil Muertes versus Prince Puma is probably the best feud in Lucha Underground history, right?
I think it is surpassing the Phoenix Mil-Mortez feud, which was also really good.
Yes. But, I mean, this one, I mean, it's crossing over into such, you know, the revisits and everything like that. I mean, it's been awesome. So,
well, and I mean, it transcends seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time they faced each other was in season one. And then, yeah, the death of Conan.
And it's,
I
it's
mean,
never,
yeah, when you think about it,
it's never felt old to me either. The triple threat match with Mil, Pentagon, and Prince Puma, it's never felt stale to me. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was done with the Grave Consequences stuff. But this feud must continue. But that is going to do it for us this week at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.